Well, hello and welcome to our pre-Christmas edition of the Daggers and Lids podcast. I'm Charles Dagnall, along with Lydia Greenway. And Lids, I actually said this on our last podcast, that I was saying, should we do another one before Christmas? Have we got a great deal to talk about? I'm not quite sure. As it turns out, couldn't have been more wrong. We've got an absolute truckload. Merry Christmas to you. You're looking very festive in your stocking-laden jumper.
Thank you, Daggers. Yeah, happy Christmas to you. This is one, I reckon I've had this Christmas jumper for about 10 years plus. I wheel it out every year and I love wearing it. So I thought I'd get it on and make a bit of an effort. I've got this on because my hair's awful, so I just thought I'd cover it over. But it's not quite as glam as your Santa's hat, which I know you just had to get a last minute scramble to match the beard.
To match my Santa's beard as well. I could be popping down your chimneys, whatever. And if so, call 999. Unfortunately, even though I think, have you actually started on the Christmas food? Because you said in the last pod that you were massively prepared. You have done all of your Christmas shopping. You are now chilled out. But have you started on the Christmas food? Because I think I've eaten 463,000 walnuts already, gone through 2.5 boxes of Quality Street and Celebrations and Heroes. So, but weirdly, I think it's all the dog walking with Blue. I've not put any Christmas weight on, so I'm very, very pleased about this.
Well, yeah, you've done well, because I've been tucking right into the chocolate. And actually, this is a weird thing, and I don't know if anyone else is the same, but I love chestnuts. So what I've been doing is I've been buying these like vacuum packed cooked chestnuts. So they're already soft and you can just eat them. And I've been doing that. I mean, I know it's not a chocolate, but no, just straight in. Yeah, no mucking about.
Just a bag of things. Yeah, I can imagine that everybody who is listening and watching, they are probably tucking in. Even if you are in countries that don't necessarily celebrate Christmas, get stuck in. That's what we say. Get stuck in anyway. We're giving you a free pass to get stuck in as much as possible. And I think before we get into the cricket that we have to talk about, because we do have quite a bit, I think I have been biting my tongue for about 3 or 4 months, something like this. I'm the worst secret keeper in the history of mankind, okay? I am absolutely terrible. And finally, I think we can unbutton the mouth or unzip the mouth and unbutton it as well. Because Lydia Greenway, we have a huge announcement, and it is a most fantastic announcement. It is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And what a way to start next year as well. But Lydia Greenway, you are eating chocolates for two.
For two, I am, yes. And I've been doing it for a while, actually. When am I due? I'm due mid-Feb. So it's actually coming round quite soon. But yeah, I haven't really spoken about it too much. Obviously, you've known for a long, long time. and you've done very well to keep it under your Santa's hat.
Very, very well. You are pregnant. You are due in sort of February time, something like this. Everybody who I know and who watches and listens to this podcast, we're thrilled. And I know you will be if you're listening and watching. You've just found out. So I'm acting as though that you already know. But you do now that Lydia is pregnant and you are having a baby. Let me just, and this might seem strange that I've announced this, because Lydia has not found out what gender the child will be. This is going to be a surprise, yes. And I just say, this makes it astonishingly hard for would-be uncles, Uncle Daggers, to buy things for said child. Now I know there's a lot of neutral stuff out there, but I want great. To, you know. So is it possible that we can find out before you do? Just for presents and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that, because the Siver Brunts, who a lot of people know, Catherine Siver Brunt is also pregnant, and we actually have the same midwife. And Catherine has been threatening to hold our midwife to ransom and
Oh,
say, you
really?
need to tell us what the gender is of their child, because they know what their gender is. But we've not found out. So yeah, Catherine is like you. She's desperate to find out, but obviously we don't know, so we can't tell anyone. But yeah,
It's
exciting news. And yeah, it will be a different summer, but I will still be working, that is for sure.
well, we will. We're just honestly just so made up, so excited. And Uncle Daggers will be only too happy to spoil said child enormously, and really, really thrilled. And we also must say a huge congratulations to the Silver Brunts, of course, that we know
Yes.
that they announced it on their social media channels. But also, you're not the only one, because a colleague of ours, Simon Dool, and his gorgeous partner B, they are expecting as well, a little bit later, I think, in the new year. So there's babies popping out left, right, and center. I just got a dog because it doesn't answer back. But essentially the same things you have to do: clean up its poo, that sort of thing.
Well, yeah.
And I'm still waiting for the dog teenage years. So lots of
Yes.
leg humping to come in the
Yeah.
next year or so, something like that.
Lots of
But no,
teething.
thrilling news, great news. Been dying to get that. I know it's like you're like, yeah, I'm pregnant, and I'm eating, and it's not the most comfortable and stuff. And meanwhile, I'm like buzzing. So that is great news. Let us move on, because we have lots to get through, as previously mentioned. We're going to kick off with the test match that has just concluded, and we'll get onto other subjects in a moment. But the test match, which has just been concluded between England and South Africa, enormous win, the first win in 10 years for England. I remember I was at, you were playing in, and I was at the last test victory in Perth, I think it was, in the Women's Ashes in
2014, yeah.
2014, it was. God, it was hot as well, wasn't it? 44 degrees, it was. It was really, really, really baking in the air-conditioned commentary box. Well, you were just melting
was
10 years,
sweltering.
10 years ago. But this is a great result for England. 395 for nine declared in their first innings. Centuries for Maya Bouchier, who hit the fastest women's test century for England, which about half an hour later got beaten by Nat Silverbrunt, who hit 128 off 45 balls. I think it was a 90, what was it, 96, 97 ball century, something like that for
Yes, yeah, it's
Nat
96.
Silverbrunt. So 395 for nine. Then they rolled South Africa for 281. That after being 237 for three. It was Lauren Bell with 4 for 49, Lauren Filer 2 for 53, Rhianna McDonald-Gay, who bowled a great spell that really kicked things off, 2 for 50 on debut for her. 281 all out. Then England 236 all out. Heather Knight falling short of what would have been a very deserved century. She made 90 off 191 balls, 6 wickets for Nonkululeko Moolapa, 6 for 67. And then South Africa in their second innings rolled for 64. 64 all out, just 19.4 overs. And once again, it was Lauren Bell, 4 for 27, 2 for Sophie Eccleston, 1 for Lauren Filer. So finally a victory, Lydia, and a good one at that.
Really convincing victory. I think as soon as the coin came down on that first morning, I was actually working on the game on the airwaves, and there was no hesitation in Heather Knight saying, thank you, we have a bat first, because the wicket looked good, the boundaries were short, it was a quick outfield. And even that 395 for nine, that was a very good score, but you can't help but felt actually 450 plus could have been doable on that surface. But England were just dominant throughout. I think Lauren Filer was really exciting to watch, just with her extra pace. Lauren Bell has found a bit of consistency, which I think is a really good thing. Well, I did have a bowling question for you, which I thought would be interesting to talk about with Lauren Bell. And maybe we'll get that in towards the end. But generally, it was a really good 3 days. I felt for South Africa. I know we're going to come on to the DRS, but all decisions that weren't right by the umpires did not go the South Africans' way.
Correct.
So I really
Correct.
felt for that. Laura Vollvaart was plum LBW in the first over. Sorry, Tammy Beaumont was
Tammy, yeah.
plum LBW on the first over of the day. A brilliant delivery from Marizanne Kapp. It could not have been missing the middle of middle even.
It was stone dead, as you would ever wish to see. But carry on.
And so the other decisions were Laura Vollvaart was given out when she inside edged it onto her pad, and then Annerie Dirksen was given out with a, it was a really confusing dismissal in the end. But the point is, South Africa were on the wrong end of all three of them. But from England's point of view, really good test match and lots of boxes ticked, I would have thought. Don't know if you would
Yeah,
agree with that.
I totally would do. And look, after the disappointment of the World T20, going away to South Africa, playing in a multi-format series, being dominant throughout it, only one defeat in the first one day international, but winning all three T20s. And look, not that you want to use South Africa as, in inverted commas, preparation for the Ashes. They are they're a worthy opponent in their own right. But that is what is on England's radar, and to have such convincing victories with so many people performing well in conditions which don't exactly mirror Australia, but there is probably a similar if you're gonna get. I think they'll be thoroughly delighted. I'm with you. I think the progression, I think the standout, and this is not to sully what Lauren Bell has done. I think she's been fantastic. I think she really has. But I think Lauren Filer's stock has risen sharply, dramatically. I think Heather Knight likes her having her as that weapon, and I think she really rounds that England side. I look at that England bowling lineup, where you had Bell and Filer and Eccleston and Dean and Siva Brunt and Rhianna McDonald-Gay, and I thought, goodness me, that's a really well balanced and well rounded bowling attack. If you're being super nitpicky, would you like a left arm seamer in that? Maybe. I mean, we're talking fractions of a micro percentage there to make it a fully well rounded attack. But goodness, that I thought everything that they were asked of them, they pretty much did. And I think they will go over to Australia in great heart, and in very good spirits and very good form as well. Lots of people spending time at the crease, lots of overs under the belt, a nice break now for Christmas. And then Ashes starting on the 11th of January. Let's get some reaction actually for that series, that test match win. Heather Knight was speaking in the press conference after the game.
First test win in a decade is a pretty important thing. My first test win as captain as well. So I loved the graft over the last 3 days that put us in the position to be able to go and do what we did this afternoon and really finish the game off in some style. So yeah, really, really chuffed with the girls' efforts so the last few days, and obviously individually nice to contribute with the runs tally as well, and also felt like I just loved captaining out there. So such a fun format to captain, like the way things change, the conditions change, what the other team's trying to do. It's a really cool thing to do, to captain a team and go out there and try and make an impact. So yeah, it was good fun. I think it's been a really good week, but I think our philosophy as a side, we want to keep moving forward. That's really important part of what we do. We don't want to stand still as a team and as individuals. And I think someone like Lauren Bell is a really prime example. The work that she's done to become a better cricketer, it's been a bit of a bumpy road over the last year or so, but I think today was really validation for the work that she's put in, sorry, to try and be a better cricketer and have different skills in her toolbox and use those skills in different conditions when she needs them. So I think today will give a huge amount of confidence from what she's done, and I think we're a really strong side. We've had some really pleasing stuff this week, but I think you keep want to still progress and keep get better. And we've got a great test. Obviously, going down under for the Ashes, it's one of the toughest tests you have as cricketers. So we'll go in with a lot of confidence and belief in what we do as a side.
Heather Knight delighted with the performance of her charges, and why wouldn't she be at the JB Marks Oval in Potchefstroom? Let's talk about DRS because it was a constant thorn in South Africa's side. The fact that you know, it wasn't available for this test match. I think we're a bit past that now when it comes to women's international cricket, especially at the playing level. South Africa, you mentioned about the Tammy Beaumont LBW. You mentioned about Laura Wolfark, inside edge in one, and also Annerie Dirksen. Now, that was the one for me, Annerie Dirksen. Let me just quickly take everyone through it. This is very potted. Annerie Dirksen, edge is one, or at that particular time, there is an appeal for a caught at short leg by Tammy Beaumont. England go up. No umpire reaction whatsoever. So you would naturally assume that that's not out. Now the umpires then went to confer. The umpires then confer and then took it upstairs. Now, because there was no DRS, the only things that can be looked at are bump balls and clean catches, neither of which were in doubt in this particular decision. No way was it a bump ball. No way was there any doubt of it being a clean catch. So strictly speaking, what they then found out was that she had inside edged it, yes, and the decision got given the fielding side's way. Now, there was sort of great uproar is the wrong word, but there was questions and quizzical looks, and you know, I know that the South Africa head coach came down and sort of spoke to that, and Laura Wolfart was not happy, and I understand that from a South African perspective. Let's hear what Heather Knight said about that Annerie Dirksen dismissal, and then we'll discuss it.
Well, we all thought she hit it, and obviously the umpire sort of delayed the decision. I don't know whether she, I guess, wasn't sure about whether the ball carried or not. It was pretty clear it did, but I think the review was around, or they're talking to each other, and then going upstairs was around whether it was a bump ball. Obviously, it was pretty clear it wasn't, but so I'm not really sure what happened there. But yeah, we were pretty confident there was an edge, and obviously that was what they were checking upstairs, whether the catch was taken. And yeah, I was really pleased because it felt like that was a real threat, and something we changed in the last couple of overs to do that, and Tammy took a good catch. So yeah, I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, obviously from a DRS point of view as well, I was pretty shocked when found out in the umpires meeting the day before that we weren't going to have it. So I think it's a real shame. You kind of come to expect it as a player, I guess, now. And I guess the reason is always money, but I think it's, particularly in Test cricket where wickets are at such a premium, it's a really important thing to have, and probably a sign of the status of this game, maybe, that we didn't have it, which is a bit frustrating.
So it was obvious that the players had no clue kind of what was going on. It worked out well for England. But Lydia, this is concerning, yes, but also, you know, are we not past this now? Does that not tell you, when there is no DRS available, does that not tell you what the powers that be, Cricket South Africa, are thinking here?
Yeah. I have to admit, in all of this, I feel for the players who are there on the wrong side of the decisions, but I also feel for the umpires. I think they are only human. They will make wrong decisions at times. And I think to give a bit of context to the decision of not having DRS, in South Africa this year, there's been 21 international matches, and this across the men and the women, and this is the only match which hasn't had DRS. There's been talk of costs, of how much DRS costs. So it costs pretty much 40k to use DRS, or it would have cost 40k for them to have used it in the match. But in the wider context, when you look at the profits that Cricket South Africa have made in recent times, I've read a few different articles, and it's like 40 million plus.
35 million, yeah. That's what I read. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a lot of money. So I think, first and foremost, I think it's the Cricket South African board, you hope, will reflect and think, right, let's not do that again, because it just exposes so many people for the wrong reasons. And yeah, it was ironic that the first over of the whole entire match, there was bad decision, and there was no DRS, and that probably played its part in the narrative that unfolded for the rest of the test match, I would have thought.
It may be 40 grand, but you do have the money, and the objects are horrific, because it will get highlighted, and then umpires. And look, in my opinion, the umpire's got to give that not out. I actually believe that he's got to get. She's got to give that not out, because you know, if on the field at that time, she Well, there was a, I don't know if there was a decision given. I didn't see a not out, like, worded by the umpire.
Yes.
Maybe I've missed something on there. But if there is any indecision, it should not be about it. The only things that should have been checked are whether it was a bump ball and whether it was a clean catch, not whether it hit the bat because ultra edge was not available. So actually, it's not out. If the umpire thinks it's not out on the field at that time, then it stays not out. And subsequently, what did South Africa lose? Like 7 for 40 or something like that, immediately at the conclusion of that. So look, it is... In the grand scheme of things, it is relatively small, but it makes a big difference. It does make a big difference to how people view it and stuff like that. But from England's perspective, really, really good for them to finish their South African tour on a high. Let's move on to the England women contracts. Central contracts have been announced for the forthcoming 12 or maybe 24 months. 17 full contracts have been announced. 7 of the players have 2-year deals, 10 have 1-year deals, and there's 3 developmental contracts. The 2-year deals are for Lauren Bell, Charlie Dean, Sophie Eccleston, Amy Jones, Heather Knight, Nat Siverbrunt, and Danny Wyatt Hodge. 1-year deals for Tammy Beaumont, Maya Bouchier, Alice Capsey, Kate Cross, Freya Kemp, Sophia Dunkley, Lauren Phylum, Hika Gore moves from a developmental to a 1-year deal. Danny Gibson and Sarah Glenn, and the development contracts Izzy Wong, Rihanna McDonald Gay, and Bess Heath. Your reaction to those contracts that have been given out?
Yeah, I think a couple of names not there anymore. So Emma Lamb and Tash Farrant have lost their contracts. I think what I'm excited about are the development contracts. I'm pleased that Izzy Wong is being given the faith to continue as a potential England player, given that the experience that she had, I think, with England. Rihanna McDonald-Gay, I think, is a really exciting cricketer. And interestingly, Marizanne Kapp, she said out of all the seamers on show for England during that test match, Marizanne said that she was the best seamer that she faced during that test match, which I think is not a bad compliment. Bess Heath as well. There's no Paige Schofield, is there? Because she was... obviously called up to the this tour, but she hasn't actually got a contract. But yeah, I mean, as you would expect, I mean, could some of those players who have been offered a 1-year contract have been given a 2-year? Probably. But I'm guessing they had numbers to work with and they felt that the players that they've gone with are going to give them the most fruitful performances, you would hope. But yeah, I don't think too many surprises, to be honest, Aggers.
No, I mean, obviously, we've not seen a great deal of Mahika Gore. And she's had exams to finish. She's had a few injuries and I think we're going to see a great deal more of her, hopefully, over the forthcoming summer. And that's probably one of the reasons why she's got a full 1-year deal. This is also the news of pay rises of 30% in these contracts. So they're going to be, the lowest is 90 grand, the highest is 130 grand per year. And then you've got your match fee payments, which are now equivalent to the men's match fee payments for T20s, one days and test matches as well. So that's good news. It's good. I tell you what,
they're not doing badly, are they?
Yeah, they're doing all right, aren't they? my God, did you play in the wrong era? But that is great news. That is absolutely great.
It's brilliant. So, it is.
There's no one that I thought a developmental contract might go to Saren Smale, because she's been involved and called up as well. So that was one. But I agree with you that those who are on, I think there's a few questions. I would have been tempted to give Phylum a 2-year deal because I want her protected as much as possible, being the quick bowler that she is. But I think generally speaking that is pretty much right. Absolutely right. Yeah. So that is the news for England. Great news that the pay increase is 30%. For me, could be a little bit more. But overall, the England central contracts dished out for another year. That's not to say we won't see other names come into the international mix potentially. Yeah. So moving on, speaking of contracts, we're going to remain on the contract front. The 100 made an announcement about pay rises for the 2025 season. And there was big sort of splashy news articles that the top men will be getting a 60% increase in their wages. That will rise to £200,000. And the overall headline was, I think there was a increase in salaries across the board in the 100. Well, that's not the full story. Mm. Let's be brutally honest. The full story is that, yes, there are rises, but there are discernible rises at the top end and not so much at the bottom end. And also, you know, the disparity between the women and the men now, top women and top men, is, well, £125,000, £135,000. And I don't think this is necessarily the splashy headline of good news that actually the 100 might have thought it was. So the bottom men move from 30 to 31,000. The bottom women move from 8 to 10,000. But still, there is a huge gap, Lydia, in a differential between the men and the women. I know why they've done it. I know why they've gone and raised the top men's, because they want big splashy name stars to come over. But actually, and I think it was Tamar Mills that made this point regarding the men for the moment, is that he said, it's great getting these people over, but actually the core of the side and who gets you to championships and who do the majority of the work is actually those in the lower pay grades. And they're only getting a very small increase, whereas, you know, you might want to entice someone over. Is a top man going to come over for 50 grand? Is it that much of a difference? I don't think so. I don't, I'd much prefer to have seen those, that kind of money, actually, what are you shoving into the women's competition and actually rate there a little bit? That's the way I feel about it. What say you? When you read the article, when you saw the announcement, what was your initial thought?
I think, oh, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because I normally always can see the disparity with the women's game compared to the men. And the women, for too long, haven't been remunerated the way that they should be. But going back to your point on the reason why they've done it, I think from a bigger picture point of view, if you look at the women's competition, we are attracting the best players in the world. So that suggests that the money isn't a problem. And I'm not saying that it's right, but I think from a strategy point of view, to make the 100 men and women's as good as it can be, and we have to be honest, the men's competition is the one that's received the most criticism. So I can sort of understand why they have done it, but I don't necessarily think they've done it in the right way, because they didn't consult with people, is my understanding. I think the PCA, the PCA have come out and said there was no, little to no consultation with them on that decision. So I sort of understand why they're doing it. If they do get the best men's players over, then I think that will only benefit the women's in the long run. But I can see by your face that you're probably not convinced that that new bracket will actually entice the best players, which is fair enough.
Look, the guys are making, you know, if you want Pat Cummins to come over, I'm not saying he would, but he's making like $3 million in the IPL. Yeah. Why is he going to come over for an extra 50 grand? I'm saying, or whoever it may be. I don't see the top men's players. I just see the same people and the same players paying for more money than, than a top overseas men's player. I don't think that extra 50 grand makes a blind bit of difference. It will to the people who they get, but I don't think it's going to be enough to entice the big stars. And look, we know that the 100's being in the process of being sold, and then the finances will change yet again. And hopefully there's more money all around, where you can sort of pay half £1 million to get one of the big stars over. That's what you're looking for. One of the A-listers at the moment, another 50 grand, I don't think is going to get an A-lister over. I don't think that's going to entice them. And I think if you've got that money, I think it could be better spent elsewhere. Maybe at the bottom level of the men's game or the bottom level of the women's game. You know, from 10 grand to 15 grand, that is actually a big difference. Or 30 grand to 40 grand. If you're in the men's comp. So I don't think this was the splashy headline that they were necessarily hoping for. You know, and I love the 100. I know there's lots of people who don't like the 100. And I understand that. But I'm in the firmly. I love it. I want it to do well. I want it to succeed, because I think it succeeds for the women's game. And we have seen, there is evidence to show us over the women's game over the last 3 years. But I don't know, something just sits a bit wrong with me.
I'm with you on that as well. I think a lot of people would agree with that too. But anyway, time will tell, won't it, as to which players they get over. Yeah,
100%. Right, let's get on to our little bits of news. Over to you.
Okay, well, this is a bit of a around the world stop, as we like to do, all the other series that are going on around the world. Now, one series has recently been completed, and that was the T20 series between India and the West Indies. All three games there were being played at the DY Patel Stadium. It was actually a really good series. It was plenty of high scores. It's always a really good pitch there. And going into the last game, it was 1-1. So that made it really exciting. In the last match, though, India posted 214 for 4. Smriti Mandana, who had been in brilliant form throughout, she scored a half century in the first and the second game. And then in the third game, she scored 77 off 47. But Richard Ghosh scored 54 from 21 deliveries, which was some powerful striking. And actually, I think what that did was it moved her up to the fastest 50 in women's T20 international cricket, or the joint fastest 50 with Phoebe Litchfield and Sophie Devine. And then in reply, the West Indies, they didn't struggle, but I think India just batted them out of the game. Chanel Henry put up a bit of resistance, 43 from just 16 deliveries. But it was Radha Yadav who, with the ball in hand, picked up 4 for 29. So India ended up winning that series. And then they're on to the ODIs, which start on Sunday the 22nd. So they're actually playing over Christmas. They've got a game on Christmas Eve and the 27th as well. So the sacrifices of the modern day cricketer, Daggers. But there we go.
It certainly is. And look, I actually really enjoyed watching some of that series as well. Didn't see all of it. But obviously the scores are great. And DY Patel Stadium is a fantastic stadium for cricket. And when I saw, obviously, seeing Hayley Matthews and Kiana Joseph as well at the top of the order. Saw her. Obviously, we saw her bludgeon England, even though they dropped her 403 times in that T20 match over at the Dubai Stadium. But just the contributions at the top of the order, they have got power hitters. Mm-hmm. They've got serious power hitters. And when you add the sort of culture of nice to see D-Dot get a half century as well in quick time.
Yeah.
I still think sometimes she can, and look, probably not going to change it now, but she throws it away a lot of the time where she's actually better than that. But a competitive series, Smriti on good form back at home. I imagine that will continue. The West Indies bowling attack does look a little toothless at times, especially the seamer. But overall, India will be delighted to get back on a winning footing, especially after their trip to Australia. They've played a lot of cricket in a short space of time, with the travel as well included in that. Looking forward to the one-day internationals that are forthcoming. Like I say, no Christmas for them. No partying.
I know. Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it, how much cricket's going on at the moment. And because the other series that's going on is Australia and New Zealand. Their first game was a washout, which was unfortunate. And this is actually a really important series because we mentioned it, didn't we, a couple of podcasts ago, that Bangladesh are a bit of a threat to New Zealand in the context of the Women's Championship and qualification for the next World Cup, which is India 2025. So New Zealand will be desperate to try and get some wins under their belt. The second ODI is due to start at 10 p.m. tonight. So we're recording this on Friday the 20th, and it is currently 4:45 in the evening. So that game will kick off at Wellington, not too long away. But I suppose the headlines from that tour so far, Dakis, has been the amount of injuries. Alyssa Healy, knee injury, means she's only going to play as a batter. Sophie Molyneux has been ruled out of the New Zealand tour due to knee soreness. And then the Kiwi, Georgia Plimmer, has been ruled out for the rest of the year, which is a massive blow because she came into her own in that recent T20 World Cup. She's got a bone stress reaction. So a stress reaction isn't as bad as a stress fracture, isn't it? It's sort of the thing that happens before you get a stress fracture. So I think that's in her hip joint. So that's not the best news.
Still doesn't sound good, though, does it?
No, it doesn't.
A stress reaction. That doesn't. That's not. It's not one of those. Oh, I've got a bruise, or I'll go and get a plaster.
Give me an ice pack.
Stress reaction. Yeah, he said there's something devilish in that. Get better soon, Georgia Plummer.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's that series. There's not really too much else to report on that front, is there?
Nope.
Because they actually haven't started. So that's the international stuff. Let's keep it international and let's move on to the WPL, because I know you were across the auction, which took place on Sunday, I think. And it was actually quite exciting to see it, how it all unfolded, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. It always is. It's a mini auction as well. So there were certain sides which were pretty much set for the course of next year. But there was numerous sides like the Gujarat Giants who were very, very keen to sort of bolster their side, maybe go a different way. They really did struggle last year. Had one or two young players that were improving. They've got some excellent overseas players as well. Just to go through some of the, it was nice to see Danny Gibson get sold.
Yeah.
She's gone to the Gujarat Giants as well. Lots of players of high quality. I think it was seven England players went unsold. It's not a massive surprise, if I'm being brutally honest. The most intriguing one to me, a couple of things. Snare Rana wasn't sold. And
yeah.
I think she's a blooming good cricketer, so she's still around to get to potentially get picked up. But Alana King, she got sold and she's going to the UP Warriors because, hey, the UP Warriors need more spinners, don't they? They're absolutely stacked with them, with Sophie Eccleston being there as well. But she got sold for 30 lakh. And it's the young Indian players that are getting sold for massive. And you'll know more about this than I. But I think is the reason why these young Indian players get picked up for enormous sums when they've not necessarily made a huge amount of headlines, but they're A, getting picked up on potential, but B, also because of the amount of local players and they're not being yet a huge wealth of them. They are very, very much in demand and you can get an overseas for a relatively cheap price and a good overseas at that.
Yeah, I think that's probably a really good point. I haven't thought about it too much, but I do know, and I think it's like any franchise competition. You alluded to it earlier with the 100, is yes, you can get in these big name stars, but if your domestic players aren't up to the level that they should be, then you get exposed. I know with the Mumbai Indians, like we had some brilliant domestic players who have really come into their own. Sanjana, who then went on to make her Indian debut because of her performances in the WPL. Saika as well, that the left arm spinner. So, yeah, they're obviously at a premium, and they're also the players who have been performing recently. So I think everyone tries to go after them. But it's also based on potential as well, I would have thought.
1.9 crore rupees, 223,000 US dollars for Simran Sheikh. So the Mumbai all-rounder. So that is, she's gone to the Gujarat Giants. 16-year-old Tamil Nadu batter G. Kamalini for $190,000. She's 16. Your Mumbai Indians splashing out on a 16. I tell you what, get the dinners out on her. She'll be, I mean, but this is what we're talking about. And obviously, Lottie will have targeted. She'll have been out. She'll have been scouting and the backroom team as well. And that's kind of sort of underlining the point that we're making, that local players, and if they've got any ability and talent, they're going to go for big money, and you can pick up your overseas players at a relatively bargain basement price, which is well worth probably doing. Right, so that's the WPL auction. We have more news. What's next?
We have. Let's finish closer to home. We've got a couple more things to wrap up with. And one is, it's actually quite nice. It was in the, oh my gosh, it was in the Telegraph, wasn't it? I think Telegraph. The women's sport supplement in the Telegraph. At the end of the year, they've outlined who they think are the most 50 most important and influential women in sport. And cricket had three of them, which was good to see. Be interested to see if people can guess who they would be. But in no particular order, Ebony Rainford-Brent, obviously because of the work that she's done with the ACE programme. Nat Siver-Brunt, and then also Beth Barrett-Wild, who I think many people will know, but some people won't. But she is and has been the absolute driving force in so many good things that have happened here in England. And it wouldn't surprise me if she continued to be someone who is really influential. So that was good to see.
Just before we move on, because you're saying in no particular order, I'm going to tell you what order they were in.
Well done, you've done better research than me, Daggers. Well,
35, Ebony Rainford-Brent was number 35.
Yeah.
Nat Siver-Brunt was number 25 and Beth Barrett-Wild was number 18. 2 points on this. Where was Lydia Greenway? Because if she wasn't at 51, why she wasn't on the list in the first place, and this podcast being a huge reason behind that. But where was Lydia Greenway at 51? And I thought actually there could have been one or two more. And I think that I thought actually for someone who's like Beth Barrett-Wild, and this is not blowing smoke up anywhere, but I think higher than 18, given some of the names that were above her, it is, of course, an opinion piece. It is. That was totally understandable. But we're all going to have an opinion on that. But I reckon a couple more from the cricketing world could have got in there. None more so than Lydia Greenway, who would have been my number one, let me tell you.
I would actually say Dame Charlotte Edwards or Queen Edwards. I think Queen, surely yes. Got to be in there at some point.
Yes, Edwards. Do you know what, Lottie? I'm surprised that she wasn't in there. That was one of the names I was thinking. But be that as it may, congratulations to those three. And yes, nice little Christmas gift to them to be on a list. They are on a list.
Yeah,
they're nice list.
Yeah. They can sit on their throne at home thinking how powerful they are. Right, shall we finish off then? We've just got one more piece of news, which actually is linked to the 100, isn't it? And I think you were going to do that.
Well, I will do it then. Why not? I'm going to flick my hat over to the other side. That's my thought. I'm in a Christmas spirit now, Liz. I feel like a glass of mulled wine.
You've had a Diet Coke.
Yes, well, I'll tell you what. Asha, my partner, brought back the other day, check this out. And you know, we were talking about eating walnuts, or I was talking about eating walnuts, because now I feel like my dad when I eat walnuts. But she brought back a bottle of Warnix Advocar. Warnix.
Wow. That's a
lurid yellow drink. That sort of like I remember my mum and dad having an Advocar. And I think you've got to reach a certain age to actually sort of warrant drinking it. Now, of course, you can't drink it right at this moment in time. You can in March.
I will be.
It was very nice, actually. Yeah. I felt quite grown up drinking an Advocar with ice.
What did you drink it with?
Ice.
Oh, as in like with a meal or a mince pie? No,
it's a creamy sort of drink, like a Baileys, but doesn't taste like Baileys. It sort of tastes like eggnog. Also, it's made from eggs, I think. Right. So it is a lurid yellow colour. But anyone out there, if you've not had a warning, go and have one. Just one more piece of news. Sorry, we're all discipline has completely
gone
Christmas. Lisa Kightley, congratulations to her. She has been appointed head coach of the Northern Superchargers. She takes over from Danny Hazel, who's done it for the last 4 years. And she, as we know, former England coach Lisa Kightley, also coached the Sydney Thunder and assistant in the Delhi Capitals in the WPL. And she's doing the sort of merry-go-round on the franchise circuit and I think Northern Superchargers. As much as I'm sure they would have been sad to have lost Danny Hazel, I'm not sure did Danny step down? Or was that
it's a good question. Well, I don't know. I wouldn't want to speculate.
And my apologies for not knowing. I'm sure someone does. And we're not as across things as you may think. No, I don't know why the change has been made, but she's a good coach. She's a bloody good coach.
Yeah.
And so, as is Danny Hazel. So not sure what the format is, but she will be coaching the Northern Superchargers next year. Lydia, we are done for Christmas.
Yes,
we are done. Thank you, everybody. And I did say in the last edition we were going to do a load of comments and stuff, but we've been prattling on for about 45 minutes.
We have.
As is our want. And so we will. I will over Christmas. I'm having a quietish Christmas. I will go through loads of comments, pick some of them out. We will react to them. But I think from our perspective, both mine and yours, Lydia, not that I want to speak for you, but we wish everybody a very merry and peaceful and happy Christmas and New Year. We hope that Santa is kind. We hope that you get to see your loved ones and spend time in their presence and enjoy the festive period as well. Thank you so much for listening to us, for watching us, for subscribing to us on our YouTube channels, and for getting in touch with us and caring so much to comment. We love it. We appreciate it, Lyd, don't we?
We do.
And we just love bringing you this podcast.
We do, absolutely. And yeah, I know we don't always respond to the comments, but we do read all of them. And we're just grateful that people out there are listening to us and absolutely have an interest in the women's game. So yeah, echo what you say, Daggers. Hope everyone has a really healthy and happy Christmas.
So say all of us. We shall see you at some point when we've decided that we're going to do another one. Well, the text messages will be flying, but we hope to speak to you at some point soon.